to Upstaging, finally. On this week's episode, we're going to be talking about Late, a Cowboy Song by Sarah Rule. We're getting our magical realism on this show this week. I'm Drew.
I'm Adrian.
And I'm Jeremy.
And back in studio with us, we have...
Hi, I'm Harley.
Woo! All right. Awesome.
Now let's talk about this insanity of this. Because...
Yeah. So this is your pick.
Yes, it was.
What was it about this piece that really stuck out to you that want to bring it on the show?
To be honest, not 100% sure. For some reason, I read it, and when I first read it, I was just kind of like I was on a bus on the way home from work.
Paint the picture for us, baby.
Okay. Yes, I was on a bus on the way home from work, and a homeless guy was on the bus, and he fell down and asked to have an ambulance. So that bus stayed there for like an hour and a half. And so I was able to finish the whole show. And for some reason, I just couldn't stop picturing a whole production of it. And usually that means it's a good sign. That means I'm interested in it.
Hmm.
And I just really like its exploration of gender and self-identity and relationships. And maturing, basically, seems to be the main theme. I seem to like shows that are about maturing.
Yeah.
Because
I'm like a good coming-of-age tale.
Not even coming-of-age, because I think, like with Company, my favorite musical, is about a grown-ass man maturing.
But Adrian, even Women of Wallace, your first choice.
We should do an episode on Company, by the way. I don't care if we've all seen it. We should do that.
Okay. You haven't seen Company.
Okay, sure, each other.
You haven't seen Company.
Continue on. We're gonna keep talking about. Isn't it my pick next week anyway?
Yes.
Spoiler alert! I know what we're doing next week. Anyway,
right. Excellent. Anyway. Oh my god.
So it stuck out to you in that you had a production in mind of it.
Yeah, I just kept feeling something. I don't know why, but yeah, I really like what it explores. I really like the magical realism thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it's just, it feels like real people talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
but then, like, something's off, like, the baby that they have is invisible, there's an approximation of a horse on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Rides in on a horse.
An approximation of a horse. But then Sarah,
she wrote it there.
How do you approximate a horse?
They literally had it written in there, it was like a saddle on wood, and they were like, and that worked fine. I was like, wait, what? They did what, Sarah?
Imagine her, she's sitting there looking at other people, she's going... See? That's a horse.
Yeah.
You guys don't see a horse? It's an approximation of a horse.
And then like one of the stage directions is like, it's an approximation of a horse. I would not say no to a real horse.
That's so telling of her as a playwright.
Yes.
Because I think at the intermission, quote unquote, she's like, intermission. Or not. Like, that's in there.
That's pretty
Sarah
great.
Sarah's stage directions are the best. They're like the they're
oh, she yeah, because she also wrote Clean House, and dude, that Clean House I would much rather read than watch, personally, because half of the comedy is when she writes in a stage direction.
That's true. It's like her communicating with whoever's putting on the next production, like in a much more personal way than just like she walked to the left.
It's such more of a conversation.
Yeah.
Oh, because I remember, like, I hate to bring it back to Clean House, but she would say really specific like metaphors for how for like the timbres of how people would say things, even. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like,
really,
you can
cool.
speak Latin or French or sing this song or that song or this if you want.
Maybe.
Machuga is startled. Suddenly, with great clarity, she thinks up the perfect joke.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Go, Sarah.
Just to make sure,
Miss Rule.
This is a lesser known of Sarah Rule's play, I believe. It's one of her two. Clean House and Late are her two most popular ones. But I think Clean House is probably the more popular one.
I feel like Vibrator is the more popular.
Modern of newer stuff. Yeah.
She wrote the Vibrator play.
Late was an early write of hers.
Yeah.
I believe.
But she wrote the Vibrator play.
Yes.
That's relatively new.
Right.
That's within the past like 5 years.
Yeah, I think so.
So we should probably go over the plot just to make sure that we were covering all bases. With our lovely listeners. Hey, hey, hey.
So this is recurring event that happens over and over and over again throughout the entire play.
And who wants to talk about this plot? Who wants to go through it?
I can try.
Go ahead.
Do you want to go for it?
Please fill in,
we'll jump in
as
cool.
I forget.
We'll
because
do it.
It's a weird one.
Basically, the show centers around the relationship between Mary, our protagonist, and Crick, her husband. Who's a bit dim and kind of immature, and Mary is a little lost and kind of I guess, kind of still figuring out who she is.
Yeah.
Mary and Crick have been together since the second grade, mm-hmm. so they're still kind of stuck in that mentality.
Yeah.
And
it's quite obviously they want different things.
A little bit, yeah.
I don't even think Crick knows what he wants.
Crick is very stuck in what... In very personal, what he wants.
It's Crick's like, in Crick world.
It feels like Mary has always been kind of floating along the river of her life and has never actually stopped to think. Like, stop, put her
what
feet
she,
down and
what
be like,
she want to be?
What do I even want anymore? Yeah. Which is, it's an interesting way to write a character that way, I think, as opposed to being very, like, grounded, like, this is me, and these are the things I want, and here's what I'm going to do to get them.
Yeah.
It
you can still do that.
Well, character. Of course, the actor has to do that, but I think the playwright writing the character, I think it probably made it easier for the actors in that way, because it's not, like, very cut and dry, cut corners. This is what you want, and this is what you do to get it. It's, mm-hmm. it's a little bit more open-ended in that
yes.
way.
So, yeah. So Mary interacts with this... a third character.
Yeah.
Red. The lady cowboy.
The lady cowboy named Red.
Mm-hmm. And she
shows up one day, so Mary comes home late.
I forgot to say, the thing that keeps happening over and over again is Mary keeps coming home late to Crick.
Yeah, and it's usually because she was out with Red. So one day she comes home late and she went to go get coffee at a Chinese restaurant with Red,
right.
who Crick is like, oh, that's the cowgirl. And she says, no, she's a cowboy. And then they just keep going, which I was like, Yasser rule.
Great distinction. Yeah.
Great.
And she just kind of jumps back into Mary's life. That this woman has not known Red for years and years and years. And then all of a sudden she pops back into her life. And all of a sudden, things are different. She just is different.
And I feel like from the way we're describing it, you think that this is like sort of a romantic thing. I think, don't mistake that for that.
No,
it feels
not.
Like Red is more like...
Like a spirit guide.
Yeah, she's more of a representation, in my mind, of what Mary wants for herself.
Yes.
She is, like, Red is the embodiment. Well, I mean, that's why the character is written as a cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Because a cowboy stands for freedom, right?
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, long... You know, horizons and a horse, just you alone, happiness, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I think Mary longs for that.
Think simplicity is the name
it's
of the
very,
game with Red. And Crick is very complicated, and Mary's trying to find something between the two.
Crick pisses me off.
It's interesting that Crick
we'll
has an immediate distaste for Red, too, when Red supposedly, if we're taking it this way through this lens, represents this freedom.
Yeah.
So if Crick, it may be indicative that his character is sort of representational of all these societal ties that bind Mary.
Mm-hmm.
But that's...
I mean, in what, like the third scene, he asks her to marry him
because
in
she's
like,
pregnant.
Because
yeah.
So
and that
I
scene
see
that
mean.
Scene starts with you're late, like her period, and it's like, oh, that was clever.
Good job, Sarah. You knew that she was like you're late,
late.
I'm gonna write a play about that, and then just wrote this.
She made a joke and then made it kind of.
And then
it.
Ran with it.
So yeah. So continue. Go ahead.
So
yeah,
Mary gets pregnant.
So
Mary gets pregnant. They have the child.
What's the name of the baby?
Jill
Blue
slash
or
Blue.
Yeah.
Because Mary wants to name the child Blue. Crick wants to name the child Jill. Because
very Pokemon.
Crick wants to... Crick Crick kind of wants to make sure that this child is as normal as possible.
So what's more normal
which is
than
funny.
A nice Bible name like Jill?
You're forgetting one key fact about this baby.
The baby is not quite a boy and not quite a girl.
Is hermaphrodite is the term, right?
They do not say that word.
She says that it has. He says that it has.
They said the doctor said that she's not quite a boy. She's not quite a girl. So they did a surgery to just make her all girl.
That's what I read it as, but it's probably left open ended that way.
Absolutely.
To just be that
the
what if
the baby is gender fluid.
The baby is a what if.
It's interesting that Mary just says in a phone conversation with her mother following the baby's birth that she just wishes that the baby had been left alone. Why can't it be what it wants to be?
Exactly. And Crick is clearly, like, you can tell that Crick has misgivings about all this. Like one of the main arguments he has for why she should be called Jill is just like she is weird enough to have a weird name too is going to be too much. Mm-hmm. We need to make her, little girl, as normal as possible. She's going to be called Jill.
It reminded me of this Johnny Cash song called The Boy Named Sue.
You're in love with Johnny Cash.
Of course you would bring up
Johnny Cash. Listen, it's a good song. In this song, we'll take a tangent. It's about this young guy whose dad left when he was little. His dad was a drunkard. And before he left...
In a Johnny Cash song?
Yeah. Whoa. And before he left, he named his son Sue. So he got picked on, he got beat up, all the girls turned him away, and one day he meets his dad in a bar.
In a bar.
And he's like, "My name is Sue, how do you do? Now you're gonna die." Beats the shit out of him, and his dad is about to he's about to kill his dad, and his dad like, listen. It's because of that name that you are strong. Because you've had to learn to fight because of that name. So I know you may hate me, but it's me that made you strong because I knew I wouldn't be
the only
there.
Thing that would have been
sounds
make,
toxic
the only
to
thing
me.
That would have made him
it
stronger.
It is, that's the point. Okay,
true.
Good.
The only thing that would have made that kid stronger is if the first name was Sue and the middle name was
Soup. I hate
Sue.
Yeah. Soup is a theme.
Soup
is a motif.
Hey, and bringing it back to Sarah Rule.
Woo!
Adrian, talk about soup.
Oh God. Okay. Well, they talk a little bit about they eat soup in the Chinese restaurant, and it's clear soup, and clear soup is supposed to like clear your head, and it's all and like I guess. It's sort of supposed to show how much is going through Mary's head at one time, that she's trying so hard to find something to clear it, to sharpen it. And when she tries to make it herself, the ingredients are like super violent. It's like murder two waterfowl with your bare hands and like put the
crush the bones
and the blood and all this like horribly violent stuff for this calming thing. And that's probably a metaphor.
Illness is metaphor.
Yeah, for the most part, when I read plays that have a lot of metaphors and I don't get them, I'm just like, oh, well, that turns me off. I don't know what's going on. But with this show, even though I don't quite get everything that it's trying to say, I can tell it's trying to say something and I get enough of it that I want to know more. Mm-hmm. And that is a sign of really, at least a show that is really well made for me.
See, for for me, when a show has a lot of metaphors, I start to look around for the meta threes, the meta twos.
I'm the pun guy.
Ah,
don't infringe on my territory.
Okay, but
you
yeah.
meta whore.
Okay.
Oh!
And now this one's explicit too. Good
wow.
job, Mr. Bun.
Drew already wow. said shit.
I'm the sweary one. I'm the one who swears. Get off of my territory.
I am the one
who cocks.
I'm the one with the jangly instrument.
Sail!
That was the only notes I could reach.
We are a disaster.
Okay, so
can I talk
okay.
about my hatred for Crick?
We will get there.
I cannot wait to talk about Crick.
So,
because I'm going to play Crick.
They have
really?
Wait to,
yeah,
yeah in workshop. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So, they have this baby, and it has a surgery just to make it a girl. They cannot decide on a name between the two of them. Mary wants to name it Blue. See the color symbolism with red
and
blue.
They call her her, so we can use
her. Yeah, they do say that the surgery makes the baby a girl.
Yeah, and they
right.
Like,
am I?
Yeah.
Did I
even,
okay.
even Mary calls
okay.
her a her. So
but we'll get to that
this.
In a minute because she writes a letter to her later, so that,
mm-hmm.
that we can address that a little bit later.
Oh,
so this baby kind of grows up in this weird state of limbo, and after this baby is born. Everything
doesn't have any lines, by the way.
Yeah, the baby's not there.
Who does not have lines is invisible.
So Red,
just like that metaphorical horse.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Red is starting to teach Mary how to ride horses, which Crick cannot stand. He just can't stand that she's coming home late because she's been out riding horses with this female cowboy.
He's pretty sure that she like he. One of his first questions, like before we even meet Red as an audience, one of his first questions to Mary about Red was, "Did she make a pass at you?"
Yeah.
Later on, when he sees Mary with Red on a horse, he's like, "You ride up on a horse to our house with another man?" It's like, that was Red. It's a lady. It's like, well, she looks like a man.
And it's just, it's very unhealthy. Like, the relationship,
mm-hmm. showing how much of a stand-up
we're,
guy,
yeah.
throughout the show, you uncover how unhealthy Crick's relationship, or Mary and Crick's relationship is, especially since, like, okay, they got together very young, so they haven't had the chance to grow as people separate from one another.
It's,
and then,
I refer to it as balloon animal relationships. So when you blow up a balloon, you have to leave the balloon untied, blow it up, and then tie it to a balloon animal. If you already put those knots into it before you blow it up, you're not going to get as much growth in there. And that is exactly what's happened with Mary and Crick's relationship.
Wow. Dang, son.
Right? I'm amazing.
Not
I
to
know.
Say that relationships that start when you're young don't last. They do.
No, sometimes.
It depends on the people.
It's but they're immature as Crick, they don't.
You need to do it in a healthy way.
You need to grow up.
Yeah.
When I grow up. That's another workshop you're in.
Hey! I have so many things.
So they...
Boys life tomorrow morning.
So they finally... She starts riding horses with Red. And finally, Crick, he gets fired from his job working as a museum security guard, an art museum, because he touched a painting.
Yeah.
He literally touched like a priceless piece of art and got fired and then is mad. And once he gets home, he's so upset, he finally tells Mary that's like, you are not allowed to see Red anymore. Which, we'll get to why that's wrong in a minute. But after that point, Mary only starts to remember... What's up? Did I miss
just,
something?
No. It's just a line that aligns with what you were saying. Crick says, I don't want you seeing that cowboy anymore, okay? Why? I want to live a harmonious life. No cowboys, no Indians, just you and me. What do you say? Mary says, she's my friend. But I'm your husband. That's more important than a friend. I need you to promise me. Like, that is such a six-year-old thing to say.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's controlling and manipulative.
It's controlling and immature and, yeah.
We'll get there. So finally, after this this is a huge tipping point for their relationship and for Mary as a character. Because after this point... they go through, I think it's like 4 years, something like that. It's 4 years, and all Mary starts to see is holidays. She calls her mother at one point and says, does it ever feel like every day is a fucking holiday?
Not in a good way, though.
And not like everything's happy, but like, we're always celebrating, and nothing is ever that great.
We have nothing to celebrate.
Exactly. She's like, we're, for the sake of nothing.
It's like, it's like trying to... act without warming up. You're just like trying to like push and think like I'm happy. Happy
because it's Christmas.
Yeah,
exactly. So I have to be happy on Christmas. Mm-hmm.
And then who wants to walk us through the finale? Because that's some heavy shit.
I don't even know where to start. Like, you know.
Well, he's holding a bat.
Oh, the journal. Oh my God. We have to talk about the journal entry.
So
do you want to talk about the journal entry?
No, go for it.
No, you...
I don't know. It's not... I haven't read it in a while.
So at one point after Mary is just so miserable after doing holiday after holiday after holiday for no reason, she finally writes Blue / Jill, who she calls Blue and Crick calls Jill.
Blue.
She writes her this letter that... It essentially says, and Adrian has it open, so I'm sure he can read a passage out of it. Or even better, we could have, you know, the actual female in the room read the passage for us.
How much of it?
Just if anything jumps out off the page at you that you're like, yes, this is exactly what you're saying.
Welcome to the big time, kid.
She writes her this letter that she's like, if you find this later, and essentially it says that you may start to feel strange as you get older. Know that you are wonderful and that I love you no matter what. And she's not just referencing...
You are you.
Yeah.
And she's, you are enough.
Which is interesting because then, you know, you just see this next scene about... The very next scene is Crick and Mary arguing about, you know, finally it's this, you know, we're calling her Blue, we're calling her Jill.
It's a highly effective juxtaposition.
Yeah, and then Mary leaves. She takes Blue, who you don't see walk, but she walks up to her and they turn around and they leave. It's this beautiful juxtaposition, but that journal entry is so powerful. Is there something that jumped off the page at you?
Specifically the fact that she introduces the letter and she says that she's writing it on the occasion of Blue's birthday. And then she says that the reason she's writing it is because sometimes I have a premonition that my heart is going to stop ticking. I don't know why it's a premonition. So, Blue, if you grow up to be a woman, one day you start feeling kind of funny. Like, maybe you're a woman, but maybe you're not. I want you to know you're not crazy, you're smart, and it's hard to grow up. And that's all she says. That's all she says on the matter of gender identity, on the matter of... She doesn't say, it's because of da-da-da-da-da, it's your birth. She just goes
Nature
on.
Is mysterious.
Nature
I think
is mysterious.
My, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that more.
Exactly.
I like that so much more.
This play doesn't feel the need to put labels on any kind of...
You know what it is?
Crick feels the need to put labels, but he's the antagonist.
Exactly.
It tackles these issues, But however, it's not there where it's like at the end, it's like, see, it is okay to be whoever you want. Let's have a good time.
Like the Kinky Boots method.
Yeah, exactly. Which is a fine method, and you can go that way. But this is a much more
Broadway, yeah.
This is a much more powerful way of doing it, in that it gives you these issues. It proposes these issues in front of you of like, that really shouldn't be issues, but we'll talk about that enough. That's a different podcast entirely. But it presents these issues of gender identity, of expectations, of societal expectations. It gives you this, it says, this is an issue. And instead of being like, this is the issue, here's how you solve it, it says, this is an issue. It is okay that this is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's it. And it leaves the rest up to you and lets you be in a mature audience and just get it.
So important. That's such a useful way to go about that, a tactic for this day and age when everybody's so intent upon classifying things in society.
This is what it is, and this is how you should feel.
Letting people come up with their own definitions for everything that they come across in life is great. Because if you think about it in total, just how society is going. Answers are coming to us so quickly nowadays. Mm-hmm. We have our phone, we have Google.
Yeah.
When people are left a little more open-ended about things that are a little more complex, it makes us think more.
We're a very information-based society right now.
Yeah.
And we have been for a long time. We're solving a lot of the questions like, what's up there, what's down there, what's all around
And
us.
Meanwhile, we assume that 50% of the other people on the planet are too dumb to understand.
And there are no more philosophers.
What this play does is that it assumes that you're smart and can make your own decisions about it. It says that...
Not everything about the world is...
It says that, yes, Red is a female cowboy. Yes, this baby is
blue doesn't
both.
Fit a gender. And that's okay. Nature is mysterious.
It lets you
more
sit...
More and more, I'm thinking that could be like a tagline for the show.
It lets you sit there with Mary and work through these issues and make up your own mind instead of telling you what the problem is and how to solve it.
You know what else is
Which
mysterious?
Is so useful in the modern era. It really is.
You know what else is mysterious?
What?
I'm going there. Crick rolling around on the floor with a painting.
Yeah, that was interesting. Can we talk about Crick? Because in order to figure out what this show is really trying to say, we have to look at the character that that's trying to say. It's like, don't be like that.
Yes.
And Crick is like this man child, but he definitely sees himself as mature and even very intelligent.
Isn't
he sees himself as very intelligent and very artistic.
He's a sophomore in high school.
A little bit.
Think they get it and they know enough to pretend, but they really just don't get it.
They don't understand. Because...
Aren't y'all sophomores?
Sophomore in high school.
College.
Fuck, my little brother is a sophomore
in college. Are so much better.
There really is a big difference there, Adrian.
Yeah, no, trust me. Last year, I probably thought I knew more things than I do.
That's probably true.
Know. It's resonating with me.
So Crick. So, what is it about Crick then? And I'm going to ask Jeremy, because he's been chomping at the bit to talk about this guy.
Give me that thing.
What is it about Crick that stuck out to you as so repulsive? Was there a moment?
It was just...
Was there a moment in this show where you're like, I read that and immediately I could not stand Crick
anymore?
Alright,
so he...
I have mine. I know I have mine.
We'll get there.
It didn't take long. Alright, so, the first line of the show is Crick's.
You're late.
So you're late. I know. I'm sorry. Where were you? I ran into an old friend on the street. There's some food on the stove. Yada, yada, yada.
I like your representation.
It sounds like Eustace from Courage the Cowardly Dog. Give me the dog.
Ah, booga, booga, booga. He kind of reminds me of Eustace, man. He kind of is, though. If we're talking about metaphors and symbolism here, it's like a big old crick in the neck, this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Okay? You all right over there?
Oh, yeah, no. Just suffering.
Yeah, so on the second page of this play, Crick is questioning Mary about Red that we talked about. But he is so persistent, and Mary's like, I was just hanging with a friend. Does it matter? And he's asking, where'd you go? You went to coffee? Oh, you went to the Chinese place to have coffee? That's our place to have coffee. Our place to go. And they don't do coffee there. And he's like, he's so controlling,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and manipulative. And I've seen relationships that are like this, and it never works out, man.
If he was smarter,
it just hurts to see it.
Yeah,
because it's plain as day, right on this page.
Well, here's the thing. I think we should be very careful about just bashing on Crick the whole time, because he is still interesting, and he still has his own wants and desires and things that can make him relatable. If he wasn't, he wouldn't get 45% of the lines in the show.
Yeah.
Like, he's someone who fancies himself as very artistic. And one moment of his that jumped out to me was when they go to the art museum. Mm. And he asks Mary to pick out her favorite painting of all these ones on a wall. And she picks one, and he's like, oh, but that one's not even famous. I haven't heard of the artist. Like, as if that makes no sense. Why would you like that one if everyone else doesn't like one? Yet, he still sees himself, like, his favorite painting is Untitled. Like, he sees himself as this, like, avant-garde. It's like, paintings are just so deep and wonderful. But he's still part of, like, the whole general consensus consciousness. He's not really his own person, but he absolutely thinks that he is. He just has so much growing.
He's a hipster.
He has so much growing to do.
Yeah.
And he is just not at the maturity level to be... First off, he's not at the maturity level to be in a relationship with Mary, especially once she figures out who she is.
I will say that, you know, while he is absolutely an imperfect character, every time, until the end, when finally there's this catharsis of, I'm leaving, mm-hmm. every time that he'd pull the typical manipulative trick of, yell, I love you so much, baby, never leave me, blah, blah, blah. That's shitty. We do not support like, abusive relationships like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But every time he does that, Mary always turns around and says, I love you too. And she, like, she is, at, she...
That's what
she do. Yeah, of course. She propagates.
Because you mean it.
Of course.
I mean, they probably did have a great connection.
In second grade.
In second grade. And that's still a huge relationship. And it sucks that probably... I do not see these characters staying connected at all after this show. Like, after the events of this show. And that kind of sucks because that's still a huge, important relationship for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a growing relationship. I think it sort of is reminiscent, I think, of a lot of our... like, first relationship. Still trying to figure out... It's as if you were still in your first relationship.
Yeah,
all the way from, like, middle school or early high school.
That's literally all they've ever known.
But, he's in that same rut of not learning the basic fundamental attributes of a healthy relationship.
And it goes back to this idea of are you in love or are you comfortable?
Yeah,
I don't know if you guys ever... It's this idea of, like, you know, you may just have fallen into this routine with this person, and you...
We'll be out in just a few minutes. Thank you.
We're running
on the clock. We'll be out very shortly. We're gonna wrap this up very soon. But this idea that if you are in... that just because you've fallen into this routine does not mean that that's what love is supposed to be. I think that in the end, what this play succeeds at doing... is, like I said earlier, it lets you be smart and make these decisions for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But at the exact same time, it lets you know that while I'm going to let you make your own decisions, you have to understand what's not right about this situation. Mm-hmm. And it lets you be smart enough to figure that out. And that's what really stuck out to me about this play.
Yeah.
Right. Really, really.
Definitely recommend the read. I think a lot of people probably have the collection that is in it because it's being sold in the UNCG bookstore.
Yeah, and you can
because
read it
I think
well.
A lot of play script analysis classes are assigning the Clean House.
Yeah, I just read that.
Late is in the
read,
book
guys.
That Clean
mm-hmm.
House is part of. So I recommend reading all of these because they're all great. I especially love Melancholy Play because all the characters turn into an almond.
Yeah, good.
So that's my trailer for the Melancholy Play.
Good times.
Come for the literature, stay for the almonds.
I want to ask Harley real quick because I see her about to jump out of her chair. You had a lot of good stuff to say about this stuff. Is there anything about this show that you really want to get across as here as our kind of our closing moment?
About late.
What's something that really that stuck out to you that you really thought this show got across for you?
It's an especially relevant and poignant piece because there's this running theme that you don't have to have all the answers. There's no necessity to classify and put everything into neat little boxes. And it's especially important to understand that other people contain multitudes and are very complex. And that the more you can internalize that belief, the better off you will be.
And the great thing is this was produced in 2003.
Mm-hmm. I
think
it's that complexity is more beautiful than simplicity.
Yeah.
And that's really what this show is trying to say. Because Crick is all about simplicity, he's all about routine.
Mm-hmm.
And that being complex and being real is more valuable anymore.
I 100% disagree. I think it's the opposite.
You think that simplicity is more valuable than complexity?
Red is the sort of like...
They're the same sides of two coins.
They're
the same coin.
Red is all about really simplicity. Red is just about being who you are.
She's like, honesty.
Her life is the textbook simplicity. I think that's why Sarah Rule chose to have her be a cowboy. That's a very simple life, you know? And I think Crick, with all of his like hardcore like long monologues about art and stuff, that's unnecessary complexity.
We should both direct this play. We should both direct this play.
Absolutely. I'll look forward to your workshop.
Direct us.
It'll be like Wild Party. I'll be Lippa, you be Lacusa.
Okay. I want to be Lippa.
No, I'm Lippa.
Oh my god.
I
want to
be Lippa.
Anyway.
Guys, what we got going on next week?
That's my pick. Spoiler alert, we're absolutely doing Company because
my god.
This is
so exciting.
This is
Can it specifically be the 2006
It is.
Version?
This is going to be the 2006 version with Raul Esparza because the 2011 one with Neil Patrick Harris is amazing. It's a concert. It's staged as a concert. There's much more dramatic depth in the 2006 version.
Can we find this one online?
There's a DVD that's in
the
library.
There's a DVD in
the
library.
I
have it right now. I just watched it the other
night. So we can pass that around.
Fantastic.
Or you can probably find it online somewhere. If you guys really want to watch it, there's multiple copies in the store. You can probably buy it on Amazon, Google Play, iTunes. But that's what we're going to be reviewing next week. I'm so stoked to talk about this musical. I love it so much.
Me too.
And guys, with that,
we'll see you next week on Upstaging.